New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Let's ride.
Time for the words that are recited before each and every game here at Dodger Stadium. Take it away, Finn.
It's time for Dodger Baseball.
What's going on, Dodger fans? Happy Friday to all of you. It's March 22nd. We've got two games officially in the books for your Los Angeles Dodgers. They split the series with the San Diego Padres out in Seoul, Korea. So they are 1-1 on the season. I'm joined by a listener of the Inclined Dodgers podcast and a first-time guest, Zach Sloan, in the house. Zach, how you doing? Let the people know where they can follow your work on social media, your X, your Instagram, if you want, and whatever else you're up to.
How's it going, everybody? I'm on X at Dodger Zach. Nice and easy. Don't really have any other socials that are related to Dodger stuff, so I won't throw those out. That's about it, man. Ready to get into it.
Awesome. Yes, well, the Dodgers managed to not escape drama early on this year. It only took one game for a massive scandal to break out. And so far from what we know, it actually doesn't involve any Dodgers players. So thank goodness. But we definitely have some thoughts on this Shohei Ohtani situation. And of course, his interpreter, who is the leading candidate right now for Idiot of the Year, Ipe Misuhara, who got into some trouble. He essentially was fired from the Dodgers, Shohei Ohtani, and he's under investigation because of massive theft. He apparently allegedly wired somewhere around $4.5 million from Shohei Ohtani's bank account to fix his gambling fixation, where he's in a massive debt, potentially $1 million or more. There's still a lot of details to be discussed and to be unleashed, so we can only, you know, expand and talk about what we know about. But ESPN has done a really good job keeping us up to date on this story.
Looks like literally right now there's some tweets coming out that MLB just announced that they have begun a formal investigation involving Shohei and Ipe. So that's fun.
There you go. See, here we are. We're live 3:00 Friday afternoon. And like Zach said, we got Bob Nightingale tweeting it. We've got
Alden Gonzalez
of ESPN. And like you said, MLB is going to investigate this situation. So let's hope for the best. We can go into what we've kind of been reading on ESPN. Apparently, Ipe held a 90-minute phone conversation with a reporter, and they got into it. Ipe was able to kind of reveal what he's allowed to in his jurisdiction right now. This is a very complicated subject, so I understand they're not going to you know, share all the details, but some interesting quotes that I picked up. One, he said, Shohei Ohtani has never gambled. He isn't a believer in that at all. He's not into that. It sounds like Ipe is taking full responsibility for his actions. He met a bookie in 2021 at the Angels clubhouse. I guess there was like a poker tournament or something going on, and that's when he connected to Boyer, Bauer, however you can pronounce it, the bookie where Ipe was involved in, you know, I guess technically illegal gambling, since in California you can't directly bet on sports. You can, you know, you can do fantasy like DraftKings, but you can't bet on games. And I'm not entirely sure what Ipe was betting on. Seems like from the details that I could find, it wasn't baseball. There's no baseball betting involved at all. It sounds like maybe some World Cup or soccer games was something that Ipe was really high on. Throughout lots of money, like I mentioned earlier, at least $1 million in debt, somewhere around $4.5 million, I guess, is what he's estimating he lost in sports betting.
Yeah, the gist that I got from that ESPN article earlier was that there was two transactions that were flagged that were $500,000 a piece, but it sounds like there may have been more up that totaled the $4.5 million, but it still seems very strange that Shohei didn't know that everything was going on as far as how much money or how much trouble he was in or all this kind of stuff. So I may be in the minority here as a Dodger fan, but I actually welcome an investigation into this. If you believe in the character of Shohei and everything that we've ever heard about Shohei is that, like, the dude just lives, sleeps, breathes baseball. He doesn't do anything else. And so if this can get all of the jockeys on X to stop complaining and calling Shohei a degenerate gambler and that he's throwing Ipe under the bus, like, I'm all for it. Like, let's just clear the air. Let's get to the bottom of it and move past it. Cause it's so ridiculous to me that anybody would actually think that this is being driven by Shohei.
Yeah. I mean, I'll get into it. Like, the conspiracy theories that are just being thrown around on the internet right now, it's just been a cesspool of a lot of negativity and toxicity of nonsense. I mean, you've got pretty big platforms that, you know, they should probably just stick to baseball. There's John Boy, who I'm not a hater on him at all. I think he's relatively good in terms of the content he puts out there, but the fact that he just jumped right into it and is basically accusing Shohei Ohtani of knowing what's going on, accusing him of gambling, it seems very salty that maybe he didn't go to his Yankees, this East Coast bias. And then you've got other guys like Jared Karabas, another big baseball guy, also just assuming Ohtani for the worst, a degenerate gambler, losing all his money. And then people like Clay Travis, who I don't really know what his memo is. I don't know if he's a sports guy or a politics guy anymore these days, but he went on to Fox News and he has all these wacky conspiracy theories out. So those are some of the big names that I noticed just being fools. But I've had some personal interactions online that I'll get to in a few minutes as well. But I mean, my goodness, this is just a disaster right now. It seems like it's the world against the Dodgers as usual. You would think that more and more people would want to root for arguably the best player in baseball and, you know, hope for the best and that he's not involved with this. But instead, we're getting the opposite of just conspiracy theories and hoping that he's guilty for whatever reason. It's crazy.
Yeah, I have a little bit of family history in dealing with some gambler addicts. And this Noisy Ninja 91 in the comments posted something that was like, it was just perfect. I'm assuming it's a she. She said, LOL, yeah, gambling addict deferred $680 million. And I think that was just like, that's just perfect, because I don't know how many people actually know people with gambling problems, but people with gambling problems don't want to wait to get their money. Now, I get that Shohei makes like $60 million a year or whatever it is on his off the field stuff, but still, like $4 million or $4.5 million to somebody who makes as much as him, it's like nothing. That's like somebody makes $100,000 a year and they're $4,000 in the hole. I mean, it's not anything significant to Shohei. I mean, it's a lot of money to us, but I think it was Bruno Mars or somebody who has like crazy gambling problems.
Yeah, that came out.
That kind of stuff that you'd see if it was Shohei gambling. Like you'd see insane numbers because they have insane amounts of money. Ipe doesn't have insane amounts of money. So it kind of makes more sense based on what we've heard report-wise of what he was getting paid on a yearly basis from the Angels towards the end of his deal with the Angels.
Yeah, and Maria G reminded me in the chat as well, Michael K going on a serious rant. Baseball players, athletes regress. I think as a broadcaster, Michael K has certainly regressed as well. Just throwing out these wacky accusations of Shohei Ohtani.
I didn't hear this.
He wants to already ban him for life. One thing. He's demanding that Major League Baseball give him a lifetime ban, and he thinks that Shohei Ohtani definitely was in the know of all this. And I'm trying to remember the exact words that he threw out there, but I think he basically said people like Shohei Ohtani think they're like gods among people so that they can get away with anything, and that he's just been kind of like a nepo baby to a sense. And it's just been an absolute disgrace, in my opinion. What's going on, Moose? He's saying what's going on to both me and Zach. Hope you're doing well, Moose. Thank you for listening as always. We got Trey B. Yeah, the God complex. That's exactly what he said. Trey B reminded me, God complex is what he described Ohtani's mentality is. So want to, of course, appreciate everyone following along on YouTube and on X. We're going to make this very interactive today, even more than usual. So if you've got questions or comments, feel free to drop those below in the YouTube chat. If you want to be generous and drop some super chats and ask us the hard-hitting questions, we'd be more than happy to answer that. We're here to hang for probably the next 50 minutes or so talking some Dodgers baseball. This Shohei Ohtani stuff is just absolutely wild. Of course, we'll dig into the Korea series as well and share our thoughts on Yoshinobu Yamamoto's first outing as a Dodger and some players' performances. And of course, if you are a longtime follower or you're new to the Inclined Dodgers podcast, make sure you're hitting that subscribe and like button. That it really does us some big favors. And we are presented by Tick Pick and Fansided. So let's see what else is going on in this Shohei Ohtani stuff. I took some notes here. Don't know if I already mentioned this, but Ohtani's lawyers and representatives are claiming that Ohtani is the victim here. No surprise, he's a victim of theft. And I want to talk about just the awkward timing of this, because like I said a few minutes ago, this happened after game one. So we had some before and after pictures, like Ohtani with Ipe, his wife, I believe Yamamoto, and maybe one other interpreter or athletic trainer was in that photo. And they were all smiles. Everyone looked happy. And then, of course, we have the first game, Ipe and Shohei are next to each other in the Dodgers dugout. All looks well. Game ends. And then maybe like 1 or 2 hours later, bam, we get hit with this big news. So I don't know if this was like the best poker face of all time between Ohtani and Ipe about nothing going on. That was just very strange to me. I don't know if you had any thoughts on like the images and videos of that.
Yeah, I think that the latest ESPN article that laid out like in the timeline sense of everything that came to ESPN and that was known, and the fact that it sounded like Shohei was very blindsided by all of this when Ipe announced it to the clubhouse seems to make sense to me, that Shohei may have known that something was amiss, that Ipe had gambled and lost a lot of money, and maybe even that Shohei helped him, but maybe not to the extent, and that it was going to be as bad as he thought, and the fact that he was asking a bunch of questions afterwards. It just, you know, yeah, I agree, though. The timing is really suspicious. Like, it's a very suspicious kind of drop when it's probably the last thing that MLB wanted when they're trying to highlight what's going on. And it sounded like in that ESPN article that they were pushing to have it come out sooner and that some of Shohei's representatives were pushing it back. Like, wait, we want to do some due diligence. We want to ask some questions. We want to talk to some people. It seems so crazy to me that it's blown up to the extent that it's blown up. I think that everybody wants to make it a bigger story than it probably is. It's probably just a degenerate gambler who kind of lost his way and went crazy and didn't want to share with somebody he considered like a brother what was going on, but didn't know how to get himself out. Mm-hmm. And for anybody who knows gamblers, that's a really, really, really hard thing to do, is to get yourself out of a hole once you're in it, because instinctively as humans, we want to just, oh, we'll go bigger next time and that'll get me out of the hole. And then you're in a bigger hole. And then you just keep repeating the same cycle. And it's like, it sounds to me like Ipe is just really screwed. That's just from my perspective. I'm trying not to be a Dodgers homer about all of this, but like, it really truly does feel like Ipe is going to be lucky if he stays out of jail. And you know, you have the IRS involved now, you have MLB involved now, like, whatever details are in here are going to come out at some point. There's too many big investigative bodies that are looking into it now to do anything. And the last thing I wanted to say is, and you probably could corroborate this since you work in finance, I have a lot of clients who are very wealthy as well. And I have some clients that are accountants, and the people that have Shohei level money,
yeah,
don't look at their money.
Yeah.
Other people look, they just say, I'm going to buy this. Here's my credit card. And then somebody else takes care of it. If I want to buy something expensive, I call my accountant and I say, wire this money to so-and-so. And various different people have access to your money. That's just kind of the nature of what happens when you're that wealthy. So my biggest thing with the whole thing is just figuring out whether Ipe had that access. If he had that access, it kind of all makes sense. And it's like, okay, he just did it himself. He took it upon himself to do it, figured it's a small enough lump amount of money in the scheme of what Shohei makes that it won't get noticed and it won't get found. And let's hope for the best, because I'm a degen gambler who doesn't know any better, can't find himself out of this hole.
Yeah, so shout out to Scott Strong, who was the one that posted that viral Michael K clip. So thank you for your good service. That was a hell of a clip to post. And I agree with you 100%. I'm glad you brought up the finance stuff, because like you said, I'm also in that sector. And I think a lot of people that don't work in this industry, the average people like you and myself who kind of more live probably paycheck to paycheck, where we are monitoring our money, we would obviously notice if there was a big lump sum slipping through the cracks. But like you just mentioned, the wealthy clients, especially someone like Shohei Ohtani, who he's making what, $50 to $75 million a year at least.
I think the last I saw was like 60 or 65.
Exactly.
Outside of baseball, not including
So
whatever he's making from the Dodgers. Yeah.
Right. And he's been an athlete for in the major leagues levels for 7 or 8 years now. So he's gotta have at least over $100 million in savings or in investments consolidated. And so for us, like, yeah, we're going to notice if $1 million to $4 million range, it's varying information. We would obviously notice if that's missing. But for someone like Ohtani, they're not going to notice that it's missing. Because like you said, wealthy people, there are some that will, but there's a large amount out there that they don't really check their savings, their holdings often. They might check it once a quarter. And so if this happened, I think, what they say, September or November range when Ipe allegedly took this out, guess what time of the year we are right now? It's tax season. It's tax season. So this is where people start to check their holdings. And so it doesn't surprise me that all these months went by and now he notices, because if he, let's say he has 104, let's say he's supposed to have 104 million, but he only has 100 million. It's pretty easy for someone to not notice that $4 million is missing for a couple months until they actually do a deep dive and they look at the transactions and notice, hey, what's this funky wire that went out for 1 to 4 million or whatever? So
totally,
people need to just chill the hell out. Like, this is how it goes, people. So the conspiracy theories that are just floating all over right now, it's honestly just, it's an outcry. Like, shut up. Like, let the people do their job. They're going to investigate this. Now that we know that MLB is involved as well, like, we're going to get our answers. It's going to take some time. Edward asking, will Ohtani be on admin leave? I mean, that's a fair question. But no, I cannot see a scenario where the Dodgers are going to place him on administrative leave, because this isn't domestic violence or anything. And he didn't do anything wrong, at least to the extent that we know. Yeah.
Yeah. And just to respond to Galagos fam's 500K isn't small. It's not small to you and me. It is small when you have the wealth that Ohtani has. Like you said, if let's just say hypothetically you have $100,000 in your savings and $4,000 goes missing, that's not that much in the scheme of what your net worth is. And you find it eventually, sure, but maybe not right away. You're not checking your bank statements every day when you have that kind of money. So, the thing is, like, it sounds like just Ipe had control of all of the information that, like, the initial story that came out, it was like all driven by Ipe. And it was like, first there was, he said this, then he recanted and said, no, I was lying. So it's like, do you believe the original statement? Do you believe the new updated statement? And how can you believe one or the other? There's no way to know at this point what's true and what's not true. You have to wait. And that's why this whole story and how it's gotten blown out of proportion seems crazy to me, because it's like, it's like a he said, she said, but it's like, it's the same person's story on both sides. So you don't know who to believe. But in both stories, Ipe said, this wasn't Ohtani, this was me.
Yeah.
And okay. So the fact that that's like the only consistent thing that he said in both of his stories, to me says, I don't think that there's any problem. That's why I said, I welcome the investigation, because I don't think they're going to find anything wrong with Shohei. Every story we've heard since he was an angel, since before he was an angel, was this dude lives, breathes, eats baseball. He doesn't do anything else. Apparently he dates a woman and marries her. But like outside of that, all of his teammates on the Angels said that all he would ever do is watch video and study baseball and do baseball related training. And when does he have time to gamble like this?
Right. Yeah, and Ohtani's the victim here, so they're not going to suspend someone that is currently in the victim role. That would just be outrageous, honestly. I did see CB saying he is here for Clover. Clover is currently napping. I don't know if I can tilt my screen so you can see him. Let's see if this works. There he is. Hopefully you're there, CB. There's Clover. He is just chilling. I'll give you 5 more seconds to just appreciate him. All the viewers out there. So yeah, there he is. You're welcome.
Can we get Lucy on for a little guest spot here? Since we're doing dogs.
You can bring on the dogs. They are always invited.
Come here. Come on. Come on. Come on. Look over here. Look over here. Yes. This is Lucy.
Dog party.
Yes. She was sleeping at my feet, so she's tired.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hessilo V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, how's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much else to add for this whole Ipe Otani saga, but goddamn, I just wish this didn't happen this early on in the season. Now it's going to be a narrative all year long. If Otani falls into a slump, they're going to blame it on this gambling stuff and people will have more conspiracy theories. So just another target on the Dodgers' back. My biggest question is, how did Ipe get home? If he flew with the Dodgers, who paid for his flight? If he's broke, did he have to train back somewhere? Is he on a boat right now? Is he still stuck in Korea?
Still in Korea. I don't know. I would be willing to bet that he figured a way to get back, because if he doesn't get back, it's going to be hard to charge him. So like Shohei may have said, just put it on my tab, get him home. Because, you know, if you know, I don't think that the Dodgers fire Ipe without Shohei like green lighting that and saying, yeah, no. He's gone. Get rid of him. So, like, that being said, he flew with the team. My suspicions are he had to fly back, whether he flew on the team plane or like some secondary plane with other people. If they had more than one plane is unclear, but I would bet a lot that he made it back.
Yeah. And now we've got Will Ironton. He's back in the up close in the spotlight. He was Maeda's interpreter for many years. He's actually been working with the Dodgers continuously since Kenta Maeda went on to other teams. He was basically working in a performance operations manager role. So he was probably helping with development and training and all that. So now he's filling in as another interpreter for the Dodgers in the meantime. So cool to see Will back, some flashbacks there. So before we move on to the actual games themselves, I did kind of tease it and I wanted to touch upon, like, why the hell is there just so much Shohei Ohtani hate online right now? Like, one of the comments that I'm seeing kind of recurring is that they're comparing what Shohei Ohtani did by signing with the Dodgers along the lines of when Kevin Durant left the Oklahoma City Thunder and signed with the Warriors. And I honestly am baffled because I don't see the comparison at all, because the Dodgers haven't been to a World Series since 2020. They didn't knock out Shohei Ohtani once in the playoffs ever because they're in different leagues. It's not like the Dodgers were killing the Angels in the playoffs and then Shohei Ohtani left the Angels to join the Dodgers. I understand that we do have some superstars like Betts and Freeman at the top, and so I can see there's a lot of jealousy out there. But how would it be any different if Shohei Ohtani went to the Braves, or if Shohei Ohtani went to the Astros,
or the
Yankees, or the Texas Rangers, who just won the World Series? And I think this is just people being stupid. They want to hate the Dodgers, and they're going to do any excuse they have. The Dodgers are the new Yankees of old. It's no longer really people hating on the Yankees as hard. It's now they're hating on the Dodgers, and they'll find any excuse they can to hate on this team.
Yeah, I agree. You pretty much summed up what I was going to say. It feels to me like it's being driven just by Dodgers hate. Like, everybody just doesn't like us because we're in the playoffs every year, and there's probably a certain amount of jealousy to that. And I think that's the big deal. So I think that's what everybody focuses on. I mean, I remember during the off season, every time we did anything, it just seemed like that hatred towards the Dodgers grew. Like, we signed Ohtani. It was like, oh my God, I can't believe they got Ohtani. And then we traded for, I don't remember the exact timeline, but then I think we traded for Glasnow and everybody was like, this is ridiculous. They're going to get all of the players. And then it was, we got Yamamoto and everybody's like, I quit baseball. I can't watch. And it was like, everybody just, it's just a hater thing. They're just jealous, and they don't have what we have, and they don't have the consistency that we've had. And as a fan, that sucks. And I agree though, that there's no comparison to the basketball thing, because it's baseball. There's, you could have an all-star at every single position and you could still lose in the playoffs, because you never know. I mean, as we know, there's never a sure thing in baseball. You could have the worst team beat the best team any day, any random day. And it just, you know, that's the game. It's different. You can't compare it to basketball where there's only five guys on the court. So.
Mm-hmm. Question coming from Justin Yamas, who is in our Discord channel. I'm going to drop the link right now. If you are interested in joining, talk some Dodgers. We had a really fun live chat when we were all up at 3 a.m., watching the Dodgers play baseball first thing in the morning. So it's definitely a great channel. There it is in the YouTube chat. Let's talk about the Korea series now. Any concerns about the pitching and infield defense? So Yoshinobu Yamamoto made his Dodgers debut and it went as bad as it could go. He managed to only go one inning. He threw 43 pitches to record three outs. He gave up five earned runs. He walked a batter. He hit a batter and he recorded two strikeouts. Yamamoto didn't have it, plain and simple. He is now going to have a 45 ERA on the season. It's a 7.18 FIP is what I believe I last saw. He didn't look composed, to say the least.
I agree.
But I'm going to throw it over to you, Zach. Should we be concerned about Yamamoto?
I think that given his track record in Japan, I don't think that we should be concerned. I think that it was a very large stage to have essentially your major league debut. And he even said in the pregame press conference that he definitely was nervous. And I think that it was very clear watching him that something was off, and attributing it to nerves is definitely a possibility. Doesn't necessarily bode that well for, say, the postseason, if we get, you know, if and when we get there. But like right now, am I concerned? Not really. I think that he's got great stuff. I think that there's a learning curve. Anytime you go to a new league and a new team and a new whatever, that you're going to feel uncomfortable until you settle in. And I think that once he settles in, he'll be fine. I mean, the calling card for this dude was his command, and he had zero command in this game.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, if he wanted to put it in one place, he was missing completely in a different place. He was leaving. He couldn't throw his curveball. Didn't seem like either, like Glasnow. I don't know if, you know, MLB did something stupid to the baseballs again in this series, but it was, you know, and I'm hoping that that in and of itself isn't like, you know, the fact that they use a different baseball, because he looked fine in spring training. I thought his stuff was fine in spring training. I thought that he was just, it looked like he was working on things. I'm not super concerned about Yamamoto. I am a little bit more concerned about our infield defense than I am about Yamamoto.
Yeah, we'll definitely get to that. Yeah, I would put my concern level at a 0.5 for Yamamoto out of 10. I am not concerned at all. Like Zach said, I don't even think he threw a single good curveball for a strike. I can't even remember one. The splitter really didn't have much movement on it at all. He for sure left a hanging splitter to Cronenworth, which resulted in a 2-run triple. And then he was just all over the, sorry, what was that?
His hit by pitch was on a splitter too. Like he just, it was like, it was moving to the side, like into a righty as opposed to down. Like it was just not good.
Yeah, he was just all over the place and he just did not have good command. I mean, honestly, it could have gone a lot worse as well. It's not like he was giving up home runs. So when I see a pitcher giving up home runs, that's when I'm more concerned. But the fact that he was still able to keep it in the park and it was just more of command issues, not really stuff, that was the issue. He'll figure it out. It's a good learning experience. We're still so early on in the season anyways. It's almost better to happen now than in the second half. So this is basically an extended spring training because they had to start early. This was only Yamamoto's fourth outing, the first official. He had three spring training, looked bad in the previous two and then this one. But yeah, I'm not concerned. Yeah, Michael Carrillo mentioning learn a slider. I don't know if that's in Yamamoto's arsenal, but he definitely didn't have any command of the secondary pitches. So he'll get better, not concerned. But yeah, the infield defense was absolutely about as bad as advertised in game two. Max Muncy had two errors, so he was the big culprit here. I mean, everyone's aware of Max Muncy's defensive woes. It was really loud in 2023 where he was super inconsistent and unreliable. And after a pretty impressive spring training coming in great shape, he looked terrible in this series, not only defensively, but at the plate. He left like 7 or 8 runners on base. He struck out at least once with the bases loaded. He failed again with, I believe, 2 on. And then in the second game, he was basically useless as well. Max Muncy looks like he's on a mission right now to lead the league in runners stranded on the base paths because he's definitely high up there right now. And as a result of Muncy's bad defense, I mean, it not only extended the inning, but runs were scoring too as a contributor. So right now, Max Muncy, definitely a concern, I think, defensively at third.
Yeah, I agree. My biggest concern about Muncy is last year started very similarly, right? Like, we're like, okay, Muncy's going to be our everyday third baseman now because that's the only spot for him to play, essentially. And he had a few defensive miscues early in the season, and he even said, I think it was in the beginning of spring training, that he spiraled a little bit because of that. And it makes me question it because it's like, okay, is this time going to be different? What's he going to do to keep himself from spiraling this time? And is the spiraling on his defense, did that contribute to his slow start offensively last year? And then is that going to contribute? Is it going to spill over to his offense again this year? And it's kind of like, I love Muncy. I love the dude. I want him to do good. He's so important to this team. But if he can't, like, I know that I've heard Friedman before say that a lot of times they do things like in thirds or quarters. So I would be hard pressed to believe that they do anything about Muncy for at least the first 2 months of the season. But it could be very painful to watch if it's the same kind of thing that happened last year. I'm not super excited about watching that. But on the flip side, Lux actually didn't look too bad. I mean, he turned, I think there was a few double plays in there. He was still doing that weird sidearm throwing thing, which I don't understand, but at least, you know, his throws were decent enough that I wasn't worried that Freddie was going to get like run over in the baseline, trying to make a, you know, backhanded pick up the, you know, into the runner or something like that. So that was good.
Yeah, Noisy Ninja 91 is right there with you in terms of the defense carrying over into the at-bats. Muncy just did not look in sync at all. He looked he was pretty bad in that series. And yeah, Gavin Lux was good so far defensively. Wasn't really much demanded of him. No. He got pretty much routine plays. And for Mookie Betts at shortstop, I mean, he was fine. He didn't blow me away either defensively. But this is what is going to be the theme for the Dodgers to monitor all first half, is that infield defense. And in the second game, it definitely, you could argue, was one of the contributing factors as to why they lost that game. Obviously, the other reasons was Yamamoto only going one inning. But on top of that, to make matters even worse, Michael Grove looked terrible. He gave up 3 runs. I mean, I don't know how many times I have to say it, but why the heck is Michael Grove on this Dodgers team? I don't know what type of dirty laundry he has on this organization, but we can't seem to get rid of him. He's not good. I don't believe in him at all. And I know that he's had his moments of brilliance where he's looked excellent, but for the most part, this guy has just been mediocre throughout his Dodgers tenure, and he's going to still be on the opening day roster as things stand. JP Feiereisen, who has been rough this spring training, was also rough in his Dodgers debut, gave up a 3-run bomb to Manny Machado, and that was basically the icing on the cake at that point. The Dodgers were able to claw their way back miraculously. I think they were down 9-2 at one point, and they fought back. But Feiereisen gave up that 3-run bomb that was in the later innings that sealed the deal. He's been optioned to AAA. I looked in the Dodgers transaction logs. He got optioned. Knack and Varland got optioned. And so we know the 13 right now. It's Glasnow, Yamamoto, Miller, Paxton Stone, Brazier, Grove, Hudson Hurt, Kelly Phillips, Vesia, Yarbrough is what the Dodgers look like they're rolling with for opening day. But yeah, the pitching was bad. And Moose 132, Grove should be bagging groceries. Absolutely. But even if he's bagging groceries, he would still find a way to give up a home run. He's just been horrendous.
Grove reminds me of Mitch White. Like, he's the same kind the same kind of pitcher. He's has these flashes where you're like, oh, he could be pretty good. I could see what's going on here. I could see maybe why the Dodgers front office don't want to let him go, whatever. But then he comes out and has a game like he had the other day, and he just got teed off on. And it's brutal to watch sometimes. And I'm with you. I think that they either need to, if he has options, I don't know if he does, but if he has options, they need to send him down. If he doesn't, he either needs to be strictly a one inning reliever, or he needs to be traded or let go. Cause it's just, I don't think he's a starter in the major leagues. I think maybe in AAA he could, or quad A kind of thing, but in the big leagues, I don't think so. I think he could be a fastball slider guy in a one inning role and be okay. But anything more than that, I think you're just asking too much.
Yeah, but my buddy Chris Camello asking what the status of Blake Treinen is. He is currently on the IL due to that bruised lung, so he'll be out at least maybe one more week, and he should be back into the Dodgers bullpen mix with Treinen and Gratterall currently sidelined. I guess that's why we have Michael Grove on the roster right now, but hopefully when those guys come back and healthy, Grove will get optioned down because he adds no value to this team. Like, I'm just sick of this. I mean, I get it. The Dodgers used their good relievers in the first game because they were in a high leverage close game. And it makes no sense to pitch these guys on back-to-back nights, especially this early on in the season when you have a bullpen of 5 other guys that are available. You got to use them.
Yep.
Keep everyone fresh. So it falls on Grove. It falls on Feiereisen. They need to do their job. They did not. And the Dodgers lost a shootout 15-11, 15-12 final score. The guys that did great though, I mean, Mookie Betts went 4-for-5 with 6 RBIs, 1 home run. He looked awesome in spring training and it's carried over into the regular season so far. He's been on fire, and Will Smith looked great in that second game too. He went 4-for-6 with 2 RBIs. And of course, Shohei Ohtani, he's been locked in the first 2 games as well. Those big 3 standing out to me, top of the lineup. So I love it.
I think the one thing that stood out to me about this game was that in the first inning when Yamamoto got lit up, second game, when he got lit up in the first inning, I was having NLDS flashbacks from last year. It was like, oh God, here we go. It's going to be a blowout. And then I got to sit here at 3 in the morning and watch this all over again. And the fact that they didn't give up and that it was 9-2 or whatever it was, after the second or third inning, and they made it a baseball game. It was close. It could have gone either way. Like if Muncy didn't make a couple errors, or if, you know, we got one extra timely hit somewhere, like it could have been a very different game. But I think, you know, that we put up 11 or 12, I don't even remember exactly what it was, runs, and Freeman didn't even do anything is kind of scary. Like, you know, he'll get it going. We all know that he'll get it going. But I think my favorite thing about this series is that Will Smith looks the way that Will Smith looks, because especially with Muncy, who is struggling, Will Smith is my favorite hitter to watch on the Dodgers. He's just such a pure hitter. Everything he does is so good. His eye is good, his plate discipline. And, you know, he hits the ball hard. He hits the ball in the air. I just, you know, everything about his swing, I love. And so like last year when he would, you know, it was very up and down. It was tough to watch sometimes. And it was really nice to see that he's coming out and doing well this year. I think we all know that guys like Mookie and Shohei and Freddie and, you know, those three are going to do their thing. They always do their thing. But it's the guys who maybe have had some inconsistencies that I'd like to see more like of a consistent, you know, good season all the way through, as opposed to having like super high peaks and valleys.
Yeah. Let us know in the YouTube comments if you have any particular questions for us. We are open to answering anything, whether it's predictions, general Dodgers questions, or obscure things. Drop those questions below in the YouTube chat and I'll make sure to read them all off and we'll answer that. And while you're here and I have your attention, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. The Incline Dodgers podcast is brought to you by TickPick. They are the best ticketing website out there. If you're a concert goer like myself, they have tickets for no service fees to all the great concerts out there. We've got crazy tours going on. I think Coachella is just like 3 weeks away. If you're trying to go out to that music festival, you can go to TickPick, download the app, get your Coachella passes. If you're gearing up for opening day, which, or I should say Dodger Stadium's home opening day, well, that's Thursday. Here we freaking go. Finally, we get some Dodgers baseball against the St. Louis Cardinals in that idiot. We talked about him, I think, a few days ago, Miles Mikolas and his obscure comments. So hopefully they can rattle him around. But yeah, download the TickPick app to get your Dodgers tickets or whatever entertainment events that you're looking forward to. I highly recommend. I use them all the time. So let's see what we've got here from Justin Yamas. I always like to ask the question, what did you guys eat or drink during the Korea games?
I guess I can go first because I didn't. I actually had a sick kid who's sick with the flu. So I happened to watch the games only because he woke me up in the middle of the night at like 2:30 both nights. So I sat in his room and I watched the games on my phone. But yeah, I didn't do anything. Boring.
I was way more tired than I anticipated. So I didn't really do much either. I just drank water. That was the only liquid I had. I think the first morning I had one of those Trader Joe's banana chocolate chip muffins. If you haven't had one of those, it's one of the best muffins out there. I could not hype it up more myself. I'm a big banana muffin guy. So go to Trader Joe's and try it out. That's all I had. I really was just tired. So let's see what else we've got.
3 o'clock in the afternoon, both of those days was pretty brutal.
Yeah. Trey B, how did Kyle Hurt look to you all? In terms of Kyle Hurt as a whole, I've been feeling for a while now, he deserves to be on this opening day roster. He blew me away in spring training and the glimpses that we saw last season from Kyle Hurt. This guy has incredible stuff. He has high velocity. He has a pretty awesome slider as well. He could be like a Caleb Ferguson when he's on, or like a Josh Hader light guy out of the bullpen.
Don't do him the disservice of calling him Caleb Ferguson.
Well, the good Caleb Ferguson. I'm thinking like the 2020 before he got hurt, TJ, or even when he's on, striking out the side in order. But this is what Kyle Hurt could be. He has the ability to go multiple innings because he's a starter by trade, and he will most likely serve in a relief role with the Dodgers this season just because of who's in the rotation currently. but he's looked good. He definitely belongs. He could pitch in some high leverage as he gets more experience under his belt. So I am glad to see Kyle Hurt get the crack as it stands currently on this Dodgers opening day roster.
Yeah, I agree. Kyle Hurt has some of the grossest stuff that I've seen come up out of the Dodgers system in a little while. I mean, his changeup is just, it's like a Bugs Bunny changeup. Like, it just makes people look stupid. And anytime you have a pitcher who can make big league hitters look stupid, they deserve to be on the roster. I agree with Maria, who said we're not a serious organization if he doesn't make the roster. Like, he needs to be. And I think that it could be similar to, like, even like when Kenley came up in the organization and he started in lower leverage, and it didn't take long for him to move up the pecking order and eventually become the closer. I mean, I think Kyle Hurt has the kind of stuff that he could kind of take over that role at some point if they wanted to move. Now I'm blanking on his name. If they wanted to move him, our closer, back into like a fireman.
Phillips.
Yeah, Phillips. Thank you. I was totally blanking. If they wanted to move Phillips back into like a fireman role with Trinan on the shelf or whatever, you know, I could totally see that at some point this season. He's got the stuff to do it. I'm really excited about him. He's fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Noisy Ninja 91. Are we going to have all the starters in the Angels games? Yeah. I mean, I believe Bobby Miller's lined up to pitch in one of those. I think Paxton as well. They are going to have the regulars play at least to start the games. Talked about this before. It's just annoying that we had regular season games and now we're going back to exhibition games that don't count. It's just really weird timing. I don't know why they couldn't have reversed the order. But yeah, the starters are going to play. This is a good question. CB, what are the realistic expectations for James Paxton this season?
I personally don't understand how more people don't realize how good of a season he had last year. Yeah. Like, outside of like his last four or five games, he had like a little knee thing or a hip thing. I don't remember exactly what it was because, you know, he was on the Red Sox, but he was like a sub three ERA guy the entire season until the last four or five games when he just imploded on himself trying to pitch through being hurt. If he can just stay healthy, I think that realistic expectations are like low three to mid three ERA guy who's like, yeah, the best four or five, you know, number four, number five starter in the big leagues. Like, he's got good stuff. And if he's healthy, he's nasty.
Yeah, I agree with you all the way. I was kind of preaching for the Dodgers to get James Paxton for quite some time now because he's, you know, low risk, high reward. He was never going to cost a fortune to put on this roster. And he has the ability to be just like another Tyler Anderson or Andrew Heaney type of guy. He is absolutely a major league starter, and you don't have to count on him to be at the front of this Dodgers rotation as a number four, maybe a number five. This is the type of guy you want to have in your rotation. He adds the diversity as well as being a left-handed starter because the Dodgers are kind of limited in that category right now. For a lefty, he still throws hard. I would say anywhere from 95 to 97 is what you can expect from James Paxton. And he has really good secondary pitches. So like a lot of starters, a lot of players in the Dodgers organization, it just comes down to, can he stay healthy? Because if he is going to stay healthy, he's going to be someone that I think Dodger fans are going to start to really like pretty early on. He has the makeup. He's a really good pitcher. There's a reason that he's been around for as long as he has. He just needs to be on the mound. It's as simple as that.
And I think he's in the right organization too, because we have so many quote unquote injury prone guys this year. And, you know, if he needs a week here or a short IL stint to deal with some soreness or something, like, they'll do that. They'll be able to take him and put him on the shelf for a couple of weeks so that he can, you know, maintain that health if necessary through October. I think Paxton is one of my favorite, like, quote unquote, under the radar signings for the Dodgers this year, because everyone's talking about the big names, but Paxton, you know, Paxton is not Noah Syndergaard. He's not that guy. We saw last year, he's still got that stuff. So I'm excited about him.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno was a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno was elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised Racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Yeah, and he could be a force out of the bullpen too in the postseason if the Dodgers have their guys lined up. Michael Carrillo, since Yuri Perez isn't going to start the season, can we pencil in the Dodgers trading for Tanner Scott at the trade deadline? The Marlins are going to be bad this season. I just don't see how they can be competitive with Alcantara, Yuri Perez, and I think someone else I'm blanking on are on the injured list. They're really shorthanded. They're not going to be competitive. They didn't do anything this offseason. Tanner Scott as a Dodgers trade option makes a ton of sense. In my opinion, they really do need a big-time lefty out of the bullpen. Alex Vesia still hasn't really impressed me thus far. Not to say he can't turn it around and kind of go back to what he once was as a true high-leverage guy. But I do think that is going to be a talking point for the Dodgers for a while, is which high-leverage reliever are they going to trade for? Because I do think at some point they could use especially a good lefty out of the pen. We saw how the teams attacked the Dodgers, or I should say the Padres. They just went with a ton of lefties, and I think that's how the Dodgers are probably going to have to counter.
Yeah, I think – I don't know that you can pencil in the Dodgers trading for Tanner Scott, but because a lot of that boils down to what Miami asks, and if they ask for someone that's absurd, you know, we may not do it. But – I think it's a very real possibility. I mean, we are clearly in that we're going all in moment right now, you know, with this offseason, that barring like just insane levels of injury before the deadline, I think there's a good chance that we get somebody of his ilk, if not him.
Mm-hmm. IV, what were your thoughts on that throw from James Outman to first with nobody there? Is that on him or Freeman or both? I think that's definitely on James Outman. They gave him the air. I don't think we need to really be concerned about James Outman's defense. I just think that was a miscue, bonehead move on him. I can live with some throwing errors as long as he's making the catches out there. I have no reason to be concerned. What about you, Zach?
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, Outman's still young. I think I don't even know how much center field he played before, you know, breaking camp as our center fielder last year. So there's going to still be a little bit of learning curve there, and he'll figure it out. He's too good of an athlete and too good of a player.
Maria G, who is going to pay Jordan Montgomery? He is, I believe, the only big Boris client left out there on the open market. JD Martinez is off to the New York Mets. Blake Snell is now with the San Francisco Giants. Who do you think will pay Jordan Montgomery, who is still a free agent?
This one baffles me this offseason. And it's I still think the Yankees are a definite possibility for Montgomery. I just don't know how much he wants to go back there from what I've heard, because he was on the Yankees before, and I don't think he really loved his time there. But, you know, he's not going to get the money that he wants, clearly. Otherwise, yeah, he would have signed already. So it's kind of like, okay, if you're going to take a pillow deal, is there a team he can win on? I don't know. I mean, all offseason, I thought the Rangers were a great fit for him to go back. But they don't seem to have the money with the regional sports network shenanigans going on. So I really don't know. And I don't know at this point whether it's Montgomery not liking the teams that have made him offers or not liking the dollars that have been offered.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think with the Rangers, adding Lorenzen, that probably means they're out. I'm just going to say, I think he ends up with the Boston Red Sox. They just announced their opening day rotation and it looks really bad. And maybe you don't think of it as a way of like they're competing this year, but if you sign Montgomery to a multi-year contract, you have him for 2025 or 2026 when they actually could be competitive. And so that's why I think Montgomery would be a good stabilizing force to add to their starting rotation. And that's it for the questions right now. So get those final questions in because we're logging off soon. So Zach, is there anything else you wanted to cover, or any miscellaneous topics you want to throw out there, or any takes?
Oh, I don't know. I thought that the Korea series in general was fun. I like that the lineup looks pretty solid. I thought that Jason Hayward, who we don't talk about very much, looked pretty good. It was interesting to see like when Doc was pinch hitting, you know, is kind of what we thought pretty much like when that starter comes out, he's going to start mixing and matching his outfielders. I guess what the only thing that I'm looking forward to going forward is seeing what Stone looks like in games that count. Mm-hmm. I'm still really excited about Stone because last year he didn't have his command and that was kind of always his calling card coming up. And he looks like he's dialed in right now and he looks like he has great command, but he also did last spring. So yeah. Stone is one of the things I'm looking forward to. But just, I, you know, it feels like Debbie Downer-ish going backwards to spring training, like you mentioned. So I'm just ready for the regular season to get going and looking to see them get into, you know, some sort of consistent role. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think in general, Dodger fans always think October, nothing serious until October. And I think we miss a lot of the fun of the season. And I think this season has the possibilities of being one of the most fun seasons that you can watch. And I think that as Dodger fans, we need to appreciate the regular season this year, especially because we have so much talent up and down every part of our roster that sometimes we nitpick at the parts that are weak, but the parts that are weak on our team are probably strengths on other teams. Like, you know, we're talking about Michael Grove. There's probably some teams that would like Michael Grove, but
oh, they should trade Michael Grove for anything they can get.
Yeah. And then also Walker Buehler coming back. I'm excited to see what Buehler does when he comes back. And I still think that the whole reason he's not starting the season is just to limit his innings because they want him in October.
Yeah.
Seen him in October. And they don't want to have to like shut him down in the middle of the year. They just want him to be able to get right through.
Yeah, that makes sense. So. Yeah, Walker Buehler went on a podcast that he is a recurring guest on, and he said he topped out at 97 miles per hour in his last throwing session, which would be insane if the Dodgers can get 97 mile per hour Walker Buehler back into their rotation.
But that's also non-adrenaline fueled. Mm-hmm. Walker Buehler. So yeah, like he's probably got another tick or two in there when he gets on a big league mound and the adrenaline starts pumping. So
yeah,
Buehler is exciting. Can't wait for him to be back. He was missed last year big time.
Yeah, I'm excited. So my final thoughts, first off, to tease, we'll have Jake and David back on soon. We're going to preview the Dodgers 2024 season and throw out all our predictions and hot takes. But I'll just kind of highlight that I think the NL West is going to be really good this season. I think there's four teams that are going to finish above 500. The Rockies obviously are like the clown of this mix. They're not a threat, but I think San Diego Padres are going to be better than people are anticipating. I think the San Francisco Giants, they've actually had a low key kind of good off season. And I do think it's enough for the Giants to hover around 500 and maybe even potentially be one of those final wild card spots. And then the Arizona Diamondbacks, who I was not impressed with what they did at all this offseason, but I still expect them to finish above 500. But those three teams are going to definitely be a threat to the Dodgers, not to take the division, but they could be in the playoffs and they're going to be tough outs. I don't think any of these teams are tough outs like they have been in years past.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. One of the commenters just asked, what point month-wise would you guys worry about Yamamoto if he has any more poor performances? I would say 2 months. I'd say if he's got an ERA at like of 9 after 2 months, I would probably start to get a little concerned. But like, the Dodgers invested how many years into this guy? Like, it's, you know, Yu Darvish and Kodai Senga and like some of these other Japanese pitchers who've come over, they all kind of started a little slow. They all had their blowups. And I think it's just the learning curve of coming to a new country. And I think that we can't necessarily expect him to just jump right in and be, you know, Clayton Kershaw-esque, like vintage Kershaw in his first start, and think everything's going to be like that forever. So
known Japanese pitcher, Trevor Bauer.
It was a brain fart right there.
Sorry, Michael, I appreciate the question, but it's way too early to talk about deadline. We can have more of those discussions later on. Let's just get to opening day first. Well, maybe the Dodgers aren't even done. We'll see. Maybe they make one more move before March 28th. Is that an opening day? I think so. Regardless, thank you guys so much for listening again. Zach making his Incline debut. Thank you so much, Zach, for hopping on. Hope you had a good time.
Sure did.
For all the listeners out there, make sure you're subscribing to the Incline Dodgers podcast, whether it's on the YouTube feed or our audio feed, such as Spotify and Apple. And for the people watching the YouTube show after this live stream, make sure to leave a comment. I want to hear your guys' thoughts on this whole Shohei Ohtani, Ipe scandal. Let it loose. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know what you think is going to happen. Let us know who's guilty, who's not guilty. You can leave an unfiltered comment and we'll interact and have fun with it. So thank you guys. We'll be back in just a few days talking more Dodgers baseball. But in the meantime, Kevin Klein, Zach signing off. Have a great weekend, everyone, and go Dodgers.
See ya.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.